It's another edition of the Snow Show. This week, it's more fun on the snow from Colorado Ski Country USA with your Snow Show hosts, Tom Fricke and Leon Joseph Littlebird.
Well, we're going to join Leon Littlebird here in just a little bit. I'm hanging out with my good buddy Sam Parker here at Arapahoe Basin, making some turns in the fresh powder. How about this, Sam?
It's soft. It's kind of nice for a change.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very, very, very dry start to the year. And man, to get 9 inches of fresh powder at Arapahoe Basin today.
Super soft underfoot. It's just a joy. You know, it makes you remember why you like doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got to see a rope drop.
Yes, we did.
We watched it from afar.
It's a good sign.
Yes, it is. It's a good sign. And reading Al's blog, he has nothing but good things to say and a very optimistic forecast for Pallavicini opening soon.
Maybe Thursday, Friday, or the weekend.
Yeah, after the storm comes in, Thursday, Friday, then the weekend, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it all bodes well.
We're going to get the season going eventually. Well, Sam, what are you looking forward to this season for skiing?
Just soft underfoot. Like I was saying earlier, you know, try and work on correcting old bad habits and getting back at it on a more regular basis than... You know, last year I skied a fair bit, but the prior four or five, not so much. And so really looking forward to doing that more often.
Well, as Leon would remind you, every other turn to the left.
That's right. Yeah. In case I forgot.
We're going to be hanging out with Leon here as we ski down to the 6th Alley. He's having a little lunch without us. We decided we're going to get some powder turns in. You go have lunch.
Nobody saves us a french fry.
Yeah. Oh, maybe one. Maybe we're lucky.
It's another edition of the Snow Show. This week, it's more fun on the snow from Colorado Ski Country USA with your Snow Show hosts, Tom Fricke and Leon Joseph Little.
Having fun on the snow is what the Snow Show is always about.
And has been for decades.
And we just keep on going. Joining us on the Snow Show this episode, Sam Parker is here. And
hi, guys.
Sarah is on the phone from Colorado Ski Country USA.
Hi, Sarah.
Howdy. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And we're sitting here at A Basin on a day after it snowed. And that's something unusual for this year.
Skiing was good.
You know, it's maybe a little bit unusual for this season, but it is not unusual in Colorado. Welcome to the heart of the ski season, guys.
Yeah, it's just beginning. I think things are going to get better and better from here on out.
We're going to
keep it
going. That's what it's all about. Hey, Sarah, thanks for joining us. And we wanted to talk to you specifically about the code, because January is Skier Safety Month, right?
It's
pretty much the time to be aware of things that keep you safe on the mountain.
Yeah, you know, it's called Your Responsibility Code, and I would be shocked if every guest at a resort somehow has not seen these high visibility yellow signs that you see posted at the base, posted on, signs going up the lift, posted at the top of the lift.
On napkins
you cannot
at the restaurants. Yeah.
Napkins. Your responsibility code is absolutely everywhere, and with good reason. It is the rules of the road when it comes to using the slopes as safely as possible. And what I mean by that is, hey, a stop sign in Colorado when you're driving your car means the exact same thing as a stop sign in Vermont, means the same thing as a stop sign in California. And your responsibility code is 10 points that you need to follow if you're going to be using the slopes in Colorado or at any ski resort throughout the United States. These are simple, straightforward rules. Always stay in control is number one. And the whole point is that these are simple, they are common sense, and they are things that you can do to take control of your what kind of day you're going to have on the mountain. It's how to have the safest possible day on the slopes.
So, Sarah, I just heard two guys talking about, did you go to the tippy top and go straight down? I don't think you read the code.
We were laughing about
that. No, they didn't read the code.
No.
Well, especially with this season being challenging to start out with and limited amount of terrain open and a lot of people on that limited terrain, you got to keep your head on a swivel.
Head on a swivel. And so 3 and 4 are a really good reflection of that. Number 3 is stop where you're visible from above. Do not restrict traffic. So you got to pay attention to where you are on the mountain and who's around you and make sure that other people can see you. And then 4 is look uphill and avoid others before starting downhill or entering the trail. So that's where the head on the swivel comes in. You've got to look uphill when you merge, when you enter a trail, before you start downhill. And a head on a swivel is absolutely the way to put it. You are sharing the slopes with a whole lot of people at a whole lot of different skill levels, children, people who know how to ski beautifully and very safely, and folks who are just starting out. So keeping your head on a swivel and making sure that you're following tenets 3 and 4 of your responsibility code is a terrific way to just make it as safe as possible for your day out on the slopes.
And I wish more people would use that when they're driving their car.
Yeah. Well, the code goes beyond the slopes.
It's like when you're driving away from the ski area, remember those responsibility codes.
Yes, absolutely.
People drive like they ski, or they ski like they drive. I'm not sure which one it is. Maybe both.
They're both scary either way.
Yeah, it's scary
right?
either
We're
way.
All out there just trying to get people to pay attention and have a little respect for those around them.
Well, and you know, if you learn how to make every other turn go left, it's a lot more fun.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, Sarah, there's a lot of events going on at Colorado Ski Country USA Resorts for safety in particular. What's going on? What can you tell us about for the month of January at the different resorts?
Oh, certainly. Well, what you are going to see is safety events at a whole bunch of resorts. You're going to see resorts talking about safety on their social media. Some of our friends at Monarch did a terrific couple of videos with a little young guy. He's maybe 8 or 9 years old. Helping people understand how to ride a lift, how to put the bar down. So you'll see lots and lots of talk on social media about safety. Maybe the absolute cutest part of Ski Safety Awareness Month is that we have sent out dog bandanas for every single avalanche dog at a Colorado Ski Country USA member resort. So they're those darling, fabulous good girls and boys are going to be out there wearing your responsibility code and helping people take an interest in it, understand what it means and how it can help them have the safest possible day. Places like A Basin are doing safety events. I know that there's Safety Fest at Copper Mountain. So anywhere that you're going to ski in January in Colorado Ski Country USA is going to have some kind of safety event. And we've sent out, I think, 12,000 stickers in English and Spanish of your responsibility code.
Cool.
So kids can get stickers. You can pat the Avi dogs and get a refresher on the code. There's all sorts of stuff going on.
So, Sarah, back in the day when Sam Parker was still the director of the ski patrol at Copper Mountain, we buried Tom Fricke in an avalanche field.
A drill, yeah.
And had the Avi dogs rescue him. How cool is that? Why we did it live on the radio.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think.
Oh, my gosh.
I think Leon.
See, now that's cool.
I think Leon was skeptical that the dogs could actually do their job. And he talks about, you know, putting a hamburger in Tom's pocket just to hedge the bet.
And Tom actually, while he was still buried, ordered pizza just to make sure that something delicious would come up and the dogs could smell.
Yeah, we're doing the snow show and figured, yeah, let's make it entertaining and order a pizza while I'm buried.
Yep.
You were doing good work there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we've always done good work.
That's what we're all about.
Yeah.
Well, I still have my button that says, know the code that I got here in
Know
Basin.
The code.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, the coat is essential. And, you know, Sarah, I want to ask you, are you still doing the program for school kids to introduce them to the sport of skiing?
You know, we outreach every way we possibly can. We're talking about it on our social media. We're talking about it in our newsletters to the parents of Ski Passport kids. We're talking about it with folks on the radio like you guys. We're talking about it every chance we get. You know, it's just the kind of thing that you can't talk about too much. You can't share, you know, too much information about it. It is so important. And, you know, particularly on a early side of the season when you're looking at, you know, early season conditions, a little bit more challenging, you know, snow conditions and terrain, your responsibility code covers everything that you need to know to have the best possible day. So whether it's ski patrol talking to guests or ski school talking to folks in ski school, kids, adults, you know, whether you see it on a napkin at lunch, it's something that we all are doing a lot of discussion about to make sure that everybody knows your responsibility and, you know, that they know everything they need to know about it. And by the way, you know, Sam, you can back me up on this. If you have questions about the code, go talk to a ski patroller.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, yes, they're busy this time of year. They're doing their best to try and get more terrain open and you know, it's
keep
just
it
a busy,
safe.
Yeah, it's a busy time of year for yeah. them. But there isn't any one of them at any of the ski areas that wouldn't be willing to have a conversation with you on the chairlift about skier safety and what their efforts are, you know, every year and in this month in particular. You know, getting back to Leon's conversation about the passport, the fifth and sixth grade passport were huge things for my kids when they were in elementary school. You know, it was just such a big deal. And they look at all the skiers that are participating that we can go to. But that was their first introduction into the code, that fifth and sixth grade passport.
And that passport
start
deal,
them young.
That's still going on with Ski Country USA, isn't it, Sarah?
Well, it is. And guys, do you know what? This year, the ski passport has expanded again. So it now includes all kids from kindergarten to sixth grade.
Really?
So,
oh, that's
yeah.
huge.
That's great.
We are trying to catch kids when they first start out skiing and, you know, try to develop this lifelong love of the sport. But also, as you guys point out, it is the perfect time to make sure that kids are starting to notice your responsibility code and starting to understand the importance of these things. It's sort of like, you know, when you've got your 12, 13, 14-year-old in the car with you and you're like, hey, this is what this light means. Here's what this sign means. Hey, this is why I'm keeping this amount of distance from that car. Whatever. You're training them up. You're getting them to think about it. And in the same way, parents, aunts, uncles, grandmas, grandpas, when you're out there with your kids on the slopes, you can be reinforcing your responsibility code and helping kids understand how important these things are for their own safety, for the safety of those around them. And, you know, grabbing kids at kindergarten is just another way to do that. And then you're building this lifelong sport that I've spent my lifetime, you know, participating in. My kids certainly have done the same. I mean, it's just one of the many, many benefits of living here in Colorado.
Sarah, I'm celebrating my 72nd consecutive season at A-Basin. So I was skiing here when I was 3 years old. And
amazing.
And then I was the training director up here for 11 years and got with Bert Skull. Our vision was to build the Kids Center, which is now a big part of the base area, and that was something we brought to this area. So I have a little magic curtain that I walk through when I get to A-Basin where I instantly become 12 years old.
Oh, isn't that the best?
It's the fountain of youth. And, you know, like Ponce de Leon, right? You know, I've got this absolute fountain of youth right here. And so when you start, you know, I don't have a memory of life when I wasn't on skis. As soon as I could walk, mm-hmm. they were pulling me around on skis. And so skiing for me is easier than walking.
anymore, yeah.
Especially these days, you know, especially now that the AGE is kicking in. But on a good day, I can still out-ski guys half my age.
That's right.
So, you know, it's so important for us to get these kids started early because, and you know our friend Ross Anderson from New Mexico, who is still the fastest American speed skier on record at 154 miles an hour. But
oh
he's
my gosh.
Full-blooded Native American. So he's the fastest Native American skier in the world.
Oh, how cool.
And he Ross, does so many cool things with kids.
Ross does so many cool things. And he's got a nonprofit where it's all about teaching Native kids how to ski. So they're
amazing.
You know, getting these kids programs is essential not only for our industry, but for our society and community as a whole. Because nothing, well, both of Sam's kids are phenomenal ski racers and phenomenal people. And his daughter, Anne, is still a professional ski patroller. And his son is a professional musician and still one of the greatest ski racers I've ever watched. But it's part of our character. It's part of who we are. And there's a big part of being a Colorado native that says, I can ski.
And I want to ski, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys know where I learned to ski? You guys will you'll remember this. You'll recognize it. Ski Broadmoor.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Ah, sure.
You know the very first time I made telemark turns was at Ski Broadmoor.
Well, my kids had ski races there.
I'll always remember driving down to Colorado Springs from Denver, coming over Monument Hill, and you'd see the lights on the slopes of Ski Broadmoor at night.
Right.
Yep.
That was so cool.
We just did a concert in Colorado Springs at the Garden of the Gods in October, and I took Lisa up to see to the Broadmoor,
yeah.
Right? And then it was like, that's where the hill was, right there. You know, that's Ski Broadmoor. And I was fortunate enough to have really good friends in Colorado Springs growing up. And so that's where they skied, right? So I had to go up and ski with my friends. And, you know, as a kid that grew up skiing at, you know, Loveland and A-Basin and Winter Park and, you know, Ski Broadmoor was like, you guys got to come ski with me.
We skied Ski Broadmoor Tuesdays and Thursdays after school and then Saturday mornings. And then every spring they would charter one of those great big Broadmoor buses and they would take all of the ski school brats over to Monarch.
Oh.
And we would ski Monarch all day long. And when I started here at Colorado Ski Country USA, Randy Stroud was the GM at Monarch, and I can't exactly quote what he asked, but he asked, were you one of those brats in the hats? Yeah. And I said, yes, Randy, I was.
Oh, that's awesome, Sarah. Yeah, and Monarch, we love Monarch. You know, I've been fortunate enough to do, back when I was still doing, as an examiner for PSA, I did a lot of training for Monarch, and I would trade them out for seats on the Snowcat. Because the Monarch Snowcat is one of the
best.
Ultimate Colorado. Tom's done it with me a couple of times. And, you know, that Snowcat tour at Monarch, man, is some of the best skiing on the planet.
And now this season, eventually, we'll have a new no-name basin open.
Right, right.
No-name basin, 377 new acres that used to be only Snowcat served. And they'll open that any time now. They're waiting for those storms to hit the other side of the Continental Divide. And did you know that will make Monarch the only resort in the United States and only the second in North America where you can ski both sides of the Continental Divide at the same resort?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we always love that part of it, though. You know, because you're skiing on the west side, you know, most of the day off the Snowcat. And then at the end of the day, you ski the east side to get back down.
Yeah,
so
that's
it's
right.
Like,
yep.
You know, and the best thing is if you're standing at the top there and you can spit in two oceans.
That's the best thing?
That's the best thing. That's the best thing, yep.
Thanks, Leon, for bringing us back down.
Keep in mind, Leon went through the time machine and he was only 12 years old.
Keeping it real. Leon Joseph Littlebird, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, think about it, man. You spit on one side, it's the Colorado River going, you know, into the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, we get it.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. The continental divide.
Yeah, we drink it first.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Exactly.
That's why I want my ashes scattered right here on Black Mountain, because it's right here at A Basin, is both sides
there
of the
you
continental
go.
Divide.
So you will essentially go everywhere.
One side of me will go to the Pacific, where I first learned to surf, and the other side of me will go to the, call it, you know, into the Gulf of Mexico through the Grand Canyon, you know, which is what I love to run in rowboats every year or so.
Well, you know what they say about Elvis. He's everywhere.
See, so this is what we get in Colorado.
Me and Elvis.
Are spread on the
we're
continental
exactly
divide,
alike.
You're going to be everywhere.
Yeah, me and Elvis. And I like peanut butter and banana sandwiches, too. Oh,
there
so.
You go. The formula is complete.
Well, so Sarah, we probably need to bring this conversation back.
Probably,
to,
yeah.
I suppose back so. To the code.
What were we talking about?
This
skiing.
Is what iPods is all about, man. It's like, Sarah, it's so delightful to have you on. Do you spell your name with an H?
I do. I am Sarah, the correct way to spell it.
Well, that is the correct way because my great-grandmother, who was a pioneer, who arrived in Colorado in 1859, was named Sarah.
Ooh, you got me beat.
With an H. And
so right. One
of, if I ever had a daughter, I'd name her Sarah.
So Leon doesn't have a daughter, so you'll have to do as
okay.
a stand-in.
And it's 75. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to have any more kids. So.
Well, there's always hope.
I never give up hope.
You could always adopt.
I never give up hope. I could adopt you, Sarah, and then it would be complete. Yeah.
Excellent.
There we go.
Excellent. Then we'll just go out and ski.
There you go.
There you go. Perfect. Yep.
That's the plan.
Well, when are you going to come up and ski with us?
You know what? Gosh, my skis are in the shop right now, you guys.
Getting tuned.
I'm getting them tuned up. I'm getting
good
them
girl.
Waxed up. And I tell you what, you guys are up there at A-Basin, lucky dogs. I am sitting down here in a delightful office in Denver. And while the view is beautiful, it is not your view. And I'm going to swap you the very minute I get the chance.
All right.
Are the offices still down there in Lakewood, Office Sims?
You know what? That's a different ski organization. We are
PSIA.
Down in, yeah,
PSIA
we are.
NSPS.
Yeah, we're in Cherry Creek, and I can't complain because I'm right on Cherry Creek Trail. So
the
I'm out there every day.
Of Denver.
Oh, right? Yeah, it's so shishi foo-foo. But here's why I love it, guys. I get to get out every day and get a walk and, like, get my ski legs under me.
Sarah, I ran a store in Cherry Creek called the Aspen Leaf. It's where Room and Board is now. And, right on 3rd and Detroit right there. And I had a tennis court on the roof and a revolving ski deck in the basement.
And my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
those,
this is back
those were the days.
Before you were born. And those were the days. And P.J. Jones and Ellen Foster and all those guys, you know, the PSIA demo team doing demos in the parking lot on the revolving deck while we served hot dogs and popcorn. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in
That's
the day,
amazing.
Man.
That's amazing.
Back in the fun days.
Well, here's what I can tell you. Here's my little ski history tidbit. My great-grandmother was a secretary at the 10th Mountain Division when they were training up near Ski Cooper.
Yeah.
At Camp Hale.
Camp Hale.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Exactly.
With all those young boys.
All those GIs.
All those GIs.
All those handsome guys who, by the way, we have to thank for really establishing Colorado's ski industry. They were the ones who
I did so much work with those guys
more.
Early on, you know, when they were back in the day when I was, you know, 40 years ago, those guys were in their 70s and stuff. And there was Cafe Kandahar, and all those guys were doing all that work. And Jimmy Huga was big in raising money for back those days. And we did so. Yep. And I got to ski with some of those legends. You know, that's one of the greatest things that I got to do in my career was hang out with those original 10th Mountain guys who were the Kandahar guys, right? Yeah. You know, who did that assault on Kandahar. And they could tell you the stories. And it
wasn't just about establishing sort of the ski culture here in Colorado. They were all over the U.S.
Yes.
You know, if you look back at who was starting these ski areas everywhere in the country, they were all 10th Mountain guys.
Well, and those guys came from all over the country, you know, like from Vermont in the north, you know, because they wanted to be in the Army to ski.
Right.
Right? And if it was, and you got into the Army in World War II and you could ski, that'd send you to Camp Hale. And I was many, many years ago, I was camping there in the remotest campsite I could find, and I found a sergeant's stars that he had pounded into a pine tree. And who knows why, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was in this remote campsite as far from everyone as I could get. I was up there mountain biking, training for racing. And I looked at this tree in my campsite, and there was his sergeant bars. He had pounded them into a tree.
Wow.
That's
and
cool.
It had, you know, it was like, think of what this guy was going through, right? He was probably out there on survival training. And this is where he maybe just got promoted, so he put his sergeant bars on the tree because he got new bars because he went up, you know, up to corporal or whatever. But you
went
know,
up in rank,
you know, you know, it was one of the most profound. And Tom and I years ago did a dog sled thing for the snow show up there. I got all the dogs to sing.
Yeah, he did.
I did. I went out and I got all the dogs to sing.
We had it on mic.
Yeah, it was great.
And a one. And
a two.
See?
Just me and Lawrence Welk.
This is the thing about Colorado, you guys. Like, not only are you surrounded by unbelievable, you know, beauty and alpine settings and the greatest skiing in the world, but you're surrounded by history, you know, world history. You know, as you wander around from resort to resort in Colorado, each one has a distinct, you know, history and character and vibe. And it's, to me, it's just, you would absolutely never run out of amazing bluebird days at skiing Colorado, because there's just so much variety and so many different resorts with different histories and different character to choose from.
One
I mean, are we the luckiest
Coop?
People
oh, we
in
are.
The world?
Yeah, we are.
Absolutely.
And one reason we love Ski Cooper is because of its 10th Mountain Division heritage. You know,
the tie-in there is
and
huge.
The tie-in there is huge. And Ski Cooper, the only ski resort in Colorado with natural snow, no snow making, and
no,
they're still,
they
and they're
are
still
the
open.
Second.
They're still open.
Monarch.
They're still open, but Monarch is also all natural snow.
Oh, that's right. Monarch, yeah. No, that's right.
Yeah, there's two of them.
Yep.
And they, by the way, if your listeners have not visited Cooper, Ski Cooper or Monarch, let me tell you what, you are unbelievable. Absolute gems, gorgeous, you know, great snow, and it's they're just very different, interesting, sort of community-focused, community-minded resorts.
Well, the vibe is all about skiing. You know, and I've always been really particular about the nomenclature of ski resort or ski area. Like Powderhorn, that's a ski area.
Ski area.
Hay Basin, ski area. Cooper, Monarch, ski areas.
Yep.
Because they're not resorts. There's no hotel. There's no condos. And it's a ski area. There's only one thing going on, and that's skiing.
Skiing. And some snowboarding.
Snowboarding.
Did they allow snowboarding?
Yeah, I think they
did
started.
Did that happen?
They started letting
did they,
those
did
guys
they start letting snowboarders come
yeah,
up?
Yeah, they started.
I remember I was teaching at Keystone when Keystone was still one of the last.
The holdout.
Keystone and Taos.
Yeah.
I think two of my favorite, you know, Taos is my second home, so they were two of the my favorite ski areas, and then they allowed snowboarding. And Taos was the last, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the last holdout.
Yeah. Alta.
Taos is a
Alta held out longer
than
Taos?
Yeah.
They still don't allow snowboards at Alta.
Well, they don't?
No. And
they still don't allow snowboards?
They still don't.
Pretty sure they don't.
Yeah. Let's go to Alta. Yeah.
Leon showing his true colors.
Yeah, well, I've skied Alta so many times. I have skied Alta. I actually got to Interlodge. I was doing back in when I was still doing consulting back in the day. I had some clients in Salt Lake, and I knew the people that ran the Blackjack Lodge at Alta. And so I went up to hang out with them and ski with them. And the first day was magnificent. And that night, I think it was actually babysitting their kid. And it snowed so much that it became Interlodge, and the road was closed, and I couldn't get back. And everyone in my office is going, what do you mean? You can't, you're making this up. It's called Interlodge. No, you can't. I can't actually go back to Salt Lake.
You're stuck.
I have to stay here for the next 2 days and ski in powder over my head.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
No, yeah, what a
terrible thing
through.
To have happened.
You know, it's so many bad memories. You know? Yeah, that was some really purely amazing skiing. And we're right there at the Blackjack, which is there. They have this private rope tow that you take from the lodge to get to the little road that takes you to the lift.
Huh.
So, you know, they start it up, you know, like some little four-cylinder engine takes this little rope tow and pulls you out of the lodge. It's just so, you know, those. But that was back in the day.
Yeah.
We didn't have AI or anything back then.
We
didn't even have cell phones back then.
Oh, wow.
We have a photograph at home of Paula's parents.
That really is the olden days.
Now, we have a photograph of my wife's parents in 1949 standing here at Arapahoe Basin. And, you know, it's the wind shirt. It's the pants tucked into the leather boots. And, you know, my father-in-law recalls standing here because he went to college with Larry Jump. And they, you know, he said, one day I'm going to have a ski area here. And they would come up on the weekends and ski this terrain. And that photograph, I got to get Alan a copy of it.
But my dad was buddies with Max Durkin.
Gotcha.
And Edna.
Yeah.
And they would literally, when I was like 10, 12 years old, would drop me off up here and then come and pick me up in the afternoon. And Miss Edna would go, Leon, have you had lunch? No. Well, come here. I'll make you a sandwich. You know, and Miss Edna is what I called her. And, you know, it was, you know, the romance of skiing. And, Sarah, this is something that Ski Country USA can really try to start rekindling. The romance of skiing. Think of it, what was back in the day. You know, Look magazine would have skiers on it, right? And then we had a guy come up here many years ago when I was still doing the training directing up here with Bert Skall. And this guy came in, an elderly gentleman in his 90s, and he had a three-ring binder with mimeographed pages. Remember how they smelled?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the mimeographed pages. And, mm-hmm. and it was the ski school directory, right? And it was 40, 50 pages long, you know? And he goes, I want to get this. This is history. You know, I had this. I taught here in the 50s, right? And that was Willie Scheffler.
Yep.
So one of the things was, make sure you invite your guests to the cocktail party, the après cocktail party.
Oh, yeah.
But there was this romance about skiing, you know, and unfortunately, I think somehow we've lost a grip on the beauty and the poetry of that romance of skiing. And wouldn't it be great if we could find a way to rekindle that And you know,
I don't know, you guys. Here's what we're doing this season. And I don't know how many Gen Zers you talk to or hang out with, but they will tell you that trying to meet people, meet a honey or just even meet friends, is really challenging. And so we are leaning into skiing as one of the last great third places, meaning it's one of the last places where you get on a lift and it's not only not weird, it's totally expected that you'll look at your seatmate on the lift and say, hey, where are you from? You know, how you doing? What are you skiing today? You know, did you drive up this morning or did you stay overnight? And you just strike up a conversation with people on the lift. You can, you know, meet somebody and ski for the day. You could meet a ski buddy and have somebody to ski with every weekend. I've got a fella here in the office who's hoping to meet some darling gal as he goes skiing every weekend. So I think the romance is not only, you know, still burning. I think it is one of those things that skiing does so, so well as a social sport, as a way to go out and do this wonderful, exciting, exhilarating thing in an absolutely gorgeous environment. But it's also a really, really friendly environment where you're just expected to chat with people from all over the world on the lift. And as a matter of fact, you know, our friends at Loveland have the Mountaintop Matrimony every year on Valentine's Day.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Talk about romance. How about Loveland in Valentine's Day and all the people that renew their vows or get engaged or get married?
Huge.
And there's like hundreds of them.
Oh, hundreds of them. They go up and they're dressed up in like dresses and tuxedos.
That's how Sam dresses every day when he skis.
He'll fit right in.
So you can never tell.
Well, it depends on the weather.
That's
true. Thanks, Leon.
But our friends at Echo, they're hosting a chairlift speed dating for Valentine's Day.
Wow.
So you go up, because I don't know if you guys have skied Echo. It's this fabulous little tiny
you know, all of us have done so much speed dating.
it was
20 years ago.
And it was back
just
in
like,
the day.
Hi, how you doing? It's like, see you later. And that's, that was a speed date.
Nice riding the lift with you.
Nice riding the lift with you.
No friends on the powder day.
It's barely more formal than that.
My first day. See you later.
Right? They hand out these little pins, like if you're, you know, looking for a boy or looking for a girl, and you put them on your goggles, and then they sort you at the chairlift and put you on the chairlift, and you've got 8 minutes to make a connection or keep on skiing.
Wow.
Isn't that cool? What if you put, I'm looking for a boy and a girl on your...
You double your chances.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there is romance yet to be found.
There
in skiing.
Is always romance.
And
always.
And the romance of people, you know, hooking up is slightly different than the romance of the sport of skiing itself. Because skiing itself has got this huge... And you know this better than anyone, Sarah. Social impact and lifelong. I mean, look, I'm sitting here with two of my best friends that we've been skiing together for 40 years, because of skiing, we have this. Every time we see each other, we hug the shit out of each other, right?
You know, it's like,
these are our brothers. You know, these are the guys we know can go out and just rip it, and that's the romantic part of skiing that I would love to see rekindled or it hasn't completely left us, but for people to embrace the fact that you really need to learn how to turn.
You know,
instead of just going straight, you mean? Going to the tippy top?
Instead of going to the tippy top and going straight.
Straight down. Went,
yeah, I went to the left. Yeah, it's like, no. It's not going to the tippy top and going straight. It's learning how to turn. And you know, being an examiner for 35 years and training thousands of ski instructors, it's about skiing. When you learn how to ski correctly, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's
amazing. You know, I was talking to my son about this just the other day, and he's learning how to row. Great. It's a terrific sport. I've done it myself. I love it.
Rowing. Yeah, the best.
Yeah, like in a four-man skull.
Yeah.
Or shell. And I said to him that it is so similar to skiing. The skill set is different, but skiing is a sport of mastery. It is not a sport of brute strength. You know, it is a sport that you can do into your 70s, into your 80s, into your 90s. Because if you learn how to be a really good skier, which, you know, might mean steep slopes and moguls and whatnot, it might just mean that you're a great bluesy skier. But those skills will take you your whole life, your whole skiing career. And I tell people all the time, invest in your skill set. Take another lesson. Take a clinic. I have been skiing since I was 5 years old. Get a coach. I have done women's clinics, and it was absolutely amazing, the improvement in my skiing with a great clinic leader who just said, hey, I want you to do this. I want you to make your faster turns faster. And so it's really the kind of thing that I encourage people to invest in. These are lifelong skills. They are safety skills. They are comfort skills. They are confidence skills. And if this is a sport that you want to do with your buddies when you are gentlemen of a certain age, this is a sport that you should.
Talking about us?
Yeah.
You should invest in it.
Gentlemen.
Yeah. What's up with that?
She'd have been wrong.
Yeah, she doesn't know us.
Gentlemen.
She doesn't know us that well. But, you know, the thing is, Sarah, it's a life skill. And the life skills, and actually, Sam and Tom and I have been sitting here talking today about how important the skill of skiing has become in our lives, you know, and not only how many connections we've made. I mean, we can sit here and talk about hundreds of professional skiers, racers, from Lindsey Vonn, Michaela Schifrin, all the way down, right? You know, Ted Ligety, right? You know, we've been skiing with these guys and connecting with them. Paul Carson, Hank Cashwood, the Mayer brothers.
The Mayer brothers,
You know, Davis Finney and ski racing and bike racing, you know, and that's all come from skiing. And so it's not only the life skills that you learn, but it's the connections you make with people who are so amazing and so inspirational and so willing to share, like that story you told about Lindsey Vonn with your beautiful daughter Anne, who's a great ski racer, great ski patroller, and Lindsey Vonn on the chairlift
when she was 11.
Your daughter was 11. Lindsey Vonn's the greatest skier in the planet right at that time, and Lindsey asked about her.
The girls said that, you know, it could have easily been a conversation about Lindsey Vonn, but she wouldn't let that happen. She wanted to make the conversation all about two 11-year-old girls and what they were doing and where they were going and where they liked to ski. And it made a huge impression on my daughter to the point she came home and she said, I got to take a chairlift ride with Lindsey Vonn, and it was great because she was so interested in what we had going on when it could have been very different.
And the same thing's true with Michaela. You know, when I met Michaela 10 years ago and she was 20 years old, she was more concerned about my health and about where I was going and what I was doing and how she had inspired me to get healthy.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
extraordinary ladies.
These are the people that are setting the pace for our culture, and they're coming right out of our favorite industry, the ski industry, because we have something really special going on here. And you know, those who connect with it and listen to this podcast,
yeah,
can realize that if you're into skiing, this is where it's at, man. I mean, we're talking about the people who are the best in the world, who really aren't all about themselves. They're really all about the sport,
the community,
the industry, the community, the connection, and especially inspiring young people to get into the sport. And that has always been my focus. You know, from the very first time we started the Kids Ski Club here at A Basin, we've inspired so many, thousands now, of young skiers to be great skiers and better people.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I think you guys have absolutely hit on something. I have a daughter as well. She's 14, and she's a great little skier. She's been skiing since she was little bitty. And I mean, it is all of those things that you talked about. And I think especially for young girls, developing a sense of competence and a sense of confidence that I can go out and I can ski this difficult trail and I can get better every day and I can, you know, even from the time that they're little bitty, I can carry my own poles. Now I'm big enough, I can carry my own skis.
Yeah,
I'm in charge of my own gear. I know what to do if I get separated from mom and my brother. I know how to go talk to ski patrol. I know how to read a map. I know how to navigate a shuttle bus and get to the base. I know how to find the bathroom. I know how to do all these things. And, you know, when people say, oh, you know, I'm not sure if skiing is important, I just say, you guys, I don't know how to explain everything that the sport of skiing has given me in my life, in my profession now, and has given my children in terms of confidence and skills and, you know, the ability to talk to adults that they don't know and to, you know, practice their physical skills and to be outdoors. I mean, the list goes on and on and on what skiing has given my family.
My stepson grew up in the kids program here at A Basin, and he's 22 now, and I'm so impressed with him. I'm so amazed by him all the time because he's so open and honest and sincere. Mm-hmm. And he's in sales. And one of the things that makes him great at sales is he doesn't have an ego.
Sure.
He's confident. He's strong. He's really there to do what he needs to do. He's interested in you. And he learned all that from ski instructors. You know,
oh, you bet.
and other people in his life. Certainly, everybody in his life has been great. But it's you know, that's a big part of his life, and the fact that he's a phenomenal skier. You know, when I watch him ski, I just go, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, Sarah, we look forward to the time when you can get up here and hang out with us in person and make some turns.
Oh my gosh, that sounds fabulous.
Well, so make a date with Tommy.
Let's plan on it.
I can attest.
All right.
I can attest to the fact that it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
That is an easy sell with this gal.
All right.
Awesome.
We'll plan on seeing you up here. Hey, thanks for joining us on
the
Colorado Snow Show podcast, Sarah. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again later this season.
On
All
snow.
Right. Sounds great.
Let's do the next interview on the lift.
On the snow. Yeah, yeah.
On the lift with the bar down, guys.
Plan on it.
All
right. Thanks again, Sarah. Take care. Stay safe
Great.
This season.
Thanks, guys.
It's a snow show flashback to the spring of 2012.
The Snow Show with Tom Fricke and Leon Littleburg on Crystal 93.
Tommy, here we are on the lift with our buddy CJ Julin. CJ, it's so great to be out ripping with you today, man. That was a pretty fast run we just made.
It was a bit firm, just right.
Spring conditions.
Spring conditions.
Woo-hoo. Well, I'll tell you, it really helps having that podium tune, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely it's working fine, man. I'll tell you, just got there ripping it, and I didn't notice anything firm. Did you, Tom?
No.
Yeah, it's like powder.
I was having a fine time carving and just grooving all the way down the hill.
That fine, granular snow.
Yeah, baby. It's nice and quick. And, well, CJ, you've got a long history here, and you're one of the boys like me that, you know, grew up here, but you were back in the days when there was a town called Climax.
I grew up in Climax. My dad was a mining engineer, came out after the war seeking fame and fortune, and ended up there. So, we were born up there. And well, when Jack Gorsuch started the ski resort there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And when people go over the Fremont Pass, they don't realize that there was a town there.
There was, and it was quite a town. In 56, I think they were the Class B state high school basketball champions.
Oh, wow.
Now, wasn't there night skiing once?
There was night skiing for a while, actually. So, and they used to do the torchlight parades and all that kind of stuff you see today. So, you know, they were all ski guys. They were mining, but the recreation, because we were, you know, 11,200 feet, was all about skiing.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. And so that really put you in a great position to be one of the early guys at Copper Mountain.
It did. And actually, I know you talked to Rick Emrine, and I was at the basin working for Larry Jump. And when Joe Jankowski bought it, he said, "You guys, you need to go somewhere else." And that somewhere else was Copper Mountain. So I was here the first year. So I was actually very fortunate to be here when it was a true frontier. Chuck Lewis had set up a really great culture here at Copper. So I look at it as almost winning the lottery. You know, it was a great thing to be a part of.
Well, that was back in the day, and Copper's really evolved like a lot of the ski areas here in Summit County. But, you know, there was a lot of fun relationships and friendships that were made back in those days that last till to this day.
They do. And, you know, we give it lip service about skiing being a lifelong sport, but it really is. And those friendships, even if you haven't seen somebody for 20 years, you see them on the hill, and it's like you haven't even left. It's
really like
great.
You saw them 3 days ago.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
It's so much fun to go out and slide with your buddies that you've been skiing with forever, too.
Yeah, it is, and we don't have to be skiing on 220s anymore.
we can actually turn now.
You said that you still have your first skis.
I do. The first skis I had were a bear, you know, they were wood skis, and they had the bear trap bindings.
Sure.
And I have a twin brother, so we actually had two pair, and one had metal edges and the other one didn't.
And the ones, wrestle for the ones with edges?
Well, we just traded. So if you had the metal edges yesterday, then today you got the ones without. So. It was great.
It's still cool to have those. I know I've got a pair like that too, but you probably started when you were, what, three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of the age they all got us out there. But those skis, back in those days, you would have, at 3 years old, you wouldn't have been able to reach the tip of those skis while they were standing up, would you?
No. They were way long up there, you know. And at Climax, they had, as I said, Jack Gorsuch had talked the mine into buying a used Constamp T-bar. So that was the lift, and we weren't heavy enough to pull it down. So we had to stand at the bottom of the lift and get people to put us between their legs and take us up to the top.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then they'd basically pick you up, throw you out, and then you'd ski down.
Well, that was the rope tow at Loveland was the same kind of deal. It was, that thing would just jerk you. 3 years old, it would jerk you off the ground when it took off.
The one at Loveland would take a few gloves, too.
Yeah. It ate your gloves, that's for sure.
There's a pile of mittens up at the top.
And we had a ritual every year where we'd sew horsehide into the palm of our glove because all the ski season that year was going to eat your glove.
Yeah, you know, we were quite creative then. I can remember my dad making the boot lace tightener with a broomstick and a nail.
Yeah.
So after every run, you could sit there and tighten your laces.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Well, of course, we had inner boot and outer boot, too. That was really cool when you finally got the double boot.
Then you were living.
Yeah, you were living, man.
You were living.
Yeah, you had made it.
You dreamed about the day you could have a pair of head giant slalom comps. The yellow base. That was
the yellow base skis. Oh, the chicks dug it.
Someday I'll have a pair of those.
Well, you know, and now here you are running Team Summit Colorado and helping all these guys and getting these academic athletes out here on the snow. And, you know, it's just an honor for us to hang out with you, CJ, and for you to take time to go skiing with us and be on the show. And thanks for being on the snow show, man. It's just great to be your friend.
Well, I appreciate it because what you guys do is remind everybody about the passion and the love that we have for this sport and how lucky we are to be able to do it here in Colorado and really here in Summit County, where we have four of the best ski resorts in North America.
Yeah, boy, that's for sure. And, you know, we're getting to the top of the chairlift here, and it's called Skiing Not Riding. So let's jump off and go rip some more of that fine spring conditions.
Yes, sir. It's like May skiing.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
The Crystal Snow Show.